Okay, let's dive in. Have you ever thought about how entire countries, these huge economies, actually manage their financial dealings with, well, everyone else?
Yeah, I mean, it's a massive flow of money, right? Goods, services, investments.
Exactly. It's almost like a giant global financial scorecard for each nation.
And the main way we track a big chunk of that is through the current account of the balance of payments. It's really fundamental for understanding international economics.
Right. And today we're digging into this really useful document that breaks it all down.
Yeah.
So our mission here is to, cut through the jargon.
Figure out the pieces, what surplus and deficit mean.
Why these imbalances even happen, and crucially, what it means for the economy and, well, for you listening.
Think of it as your shortcut to getting up to speed on a key part of how global finance works.
So let's start right there. What exactly is the current account?
Okay, so it's a major component, one part, of a country's overall balance of payments, or BOP.
The BOP. Got it.
And its job, essentially, is to record all the transactions between a country and the rest of the world that aren't about buying or selling financial assets. Think day-to-day stuff.
Okay, so more about the immediate flows of money from things like trade and income rather than, say, long-term investments or borrowing.
Precisely. It tracks whether a country, on balance, is earning more from selling things abroad, from its overseas investments, and from certain transfers than it's spending on imports, paying out income to foreign investors, and sending transfers out.
It's the net result of all those flows.
Exactly.
And the material we looked at splits this into four main parts. It's not just about like shipping boxes back and forth, is it?
No, definitely not. Although that's the first pillar, the one people usually think of, trade in goods.
Right, the physical stuff, yeah.
Yep. Cars, computers, food, clothes, machinery, tangible items. When your country sells these abroad, that's an export. Money comes in a credit.
And when you buy goods from other countries.
That's an import. Money goes out a debit. Simple enough. If you export more than you import, you have a goods trade surplus.
And the other way around is a deficit.
Right. And this is sometimes called a visible balance because you can, actually see the goods.
Makes sense. Visible trade. What's pillar number two?
That would be trade in services. This gets called the invisible balance.
So things you can't physically touch.
Exactly. Banking, insurance, tourism is a big one, transport, education services, IT consulting. When your residents provide these to foreigners, like, say, tourists visiting your country, that's a service export.
Money in, a credit.
And when your residents pay for foreign banking services or travel abroad for tourism, that's a service import. Money out, a debit.
And this part's getting bigger, right? Especially for developed economies.
Oh, absolutely. It's a huge and growing part of the picture for many countries.
Okay, so we have goods, we have services. What about things like profits coming back from overseas investments? Where does that fit?
That's the third component, primary income. This covers income that residents earn from their investments abroad. Think profits, dividends, interest payments from foreign assets.
So if a UK company owns a factory in France, the profits sent back to the UK would be here.
Yes, that's a credit for the UK's primary income. But it also works the other way. Income paid out to foreign investors who own assets in your country, that's a debit.
Right.
And primary income also includes wages and salaries. If your citizens work abroad and send money home, that's a credit.
Like remittances. Or is that different?
Well, wages earned directly are primary income. Remittances sent by migrants already living abroad often fall into the next category. But if someone, say, commutes across a border to work, their wages earned are primary income. Conversely, wages paid to foreign workers in your country that they send home are a debit.
Interesting. So it captures both investment income and some types of labor income. Got it. What's the last piece?
The fourth pillar is secondary income, sometimes called current transfers.
Transfers, like foreign aid.
Exactly. Foreign aid is a classic example. These are basically one-way payments. No immediate good or service is exchanged in return. So think government aid payments, pensions paid to citizens living overseas, those worker remittances we just touched on, money sent home by migrants' donations, international grants.
And these are just straight flows of money affecting the balance directly.
Yes, so they directly add to or subtract from the current account balance.
So let me recap. Goods, services, primary income from investments and wages, and secondary income, which is transfers. You just add up the balance from each of those four.
That's precisely how you get the overall current account balance, or CAB.
Okay, the source gave a calculation example. Let's run through that quickly.
Sure. So imagine goods exports are $300 billion. but goods imports are $350 billion.
Okay, so that's a $50 billion deficit in goods.
Right.
And it's 50 BU.
Right. But then for services, maybe exports are $200 billion and imports are only $150 billion.
Ah, so that's a $50 billion surplus in services plus 50 dealers. They cancel out the goods deficit so far.
Exactly. Now, let's say primary income shows a net inflow, a surplus of $10 billion. More coming in from abroad than going out.
Okay, plus $10.
And finally, secondary income has a net outflow, a deficit of $5 billion. Maybe more aid sent out or remittances leaving.
So negative $5 BUs there.
So you sum it all up. Negative $50 for goods, plus $50 BUs for services, plus $10 for primary income, and negative $5 for secondary income.
Let's see, the 50s cancel, plus 10 minus 5. That's a total of plus $5 billion.
Oh,
wait, the example in the notes was negative $5. Let me recheck the prompt example.
Oh, yeah.
Ah, yes. Goods, negative $50. Services, plus $40. Primary, plus $10. Secondary, negative $5 Bs. Okay, let's use those numbers.
Okay, right. So goods, negative $50. Services, plus $40 Bs.
Primary income, plus $10. Secondary income, negative $5.
So negative $50 plus 40 Bs is, I guess, to $10. Add the plus $10 from primary income, you're at zero. Then subtract the $5 from secondary income.
And that gives a current account balance of negative $5 billion.
A deficit.
Exactly. So even with a surplus in primary income and a smaller one in services, the goods deficit and the secondary income outflow pull the overall balance down. Okay, that makes sense. And if the final number was positive, it'd be a current account surplus.
Correct. A surplus means the country is, overall, a net lender to the world through these channels. A deficit means it's a net borrower.
And knowing that surplus or deficit figure is obviously pretty important for gauging a country's economic health internationally.
It's a really crucial indicator, yes.
So that naturally leads to the next question. Why do countries end up with these big imbalances? What causes a persistent deficit or surplus?
Well, there are quite a few factors involved. A major one is currency fluctuations, exchange rates.
Right. How does the value of a country's currency play into this?
Well, think about it. If your currency becomes stronger, more valuable compared to others,
your exports get more expensive for foreigners to buy.
Exactly. And at the same time, imports become cheaper for your own residents. So a strong currency tends to push the current account towards deficit.
And a weaker currency does the opposite, makes exports cheaper, imports pricier.
Correct. It can help improve the balance, move it towards surplus. So exchange rates are a big lever.
Okay, what else?
Another key factor is differences in economic growth. How fast different economies are growing.
How does that work?
If your economy is growing really fast, people have more income, businesses are investing, demand is high.
And some of that demand gets spent on imported goods and services.
Precisely. Meanwhile, if your main trading partners are growing slowly, their demand for your exports might be weak.
So fast growth at home plus slow growth abroad equals potentially a worsening deficit.
That's often how it plays out.
The source material also mentions structural problems. What does that mean?
Yeah, these are like deeper underlying issues within the economy itself. Maybe your industries just aren't very competitive internationally.
Like not productive enough or innovative enough?
Could be. Or maybe the country relies too heavily on importing essential things instead of making them at home. Or perhaps there's not enough investment in key areas like technology or infrastructure that would boost competitiveness.
So internal weaknesses that make it hard to sell abroad and easy to buy from abroad.
That's the idea. Then there's inflation.
Rising prices. How does that affect the balance?
If inflation in your country is much higher than in the countries you trade with, your products become relatively more expensive for everyone.
Ah, so it makes your exports less attractive and foreign imports look cheaper by comparison.
Exactly, which again tends to worsen the current account balance.
Okay, makes sense. Now, you mentioned something earlier that sounded a bit counterintuitive about foreign direct investment.
Right, high foreign direct investment, FDI. Now, the initial money coming in for FDI, like building a factory, that's recorded elsewhere in the balance of payments, in the financial account usually.
Right.
But the income generated later by that foreign-owned factory, the profits or dividends that get sent back to the foreign parent company.
Ah, that flow shows up in the current account.
Yes, as an outflow under primary income. It's a debit.
So attracting lots of foreign investment, well, maybe good initially, can actually lead to a persistent drag on the current account later on as profits flow out.
It can, yes. It's something countries have to manage, even if the investment itself was beneficial in other ways.
That's a really crucial point.
Yeah.
Okay, one more cause mentioned was dependence on energy and raw material imports.
Yeah, this is a big one for many countries. If you simply have to import huge amounts of oil, gas, metals, or even basic foodstuffs just to function,
yeah,
then you're facing a potentially large ongoing trade deficit right there, regardless of anything else.
Pretty much. The cost of those essential imports can create a structural deficit that's hard to overcome.
Wow. Okay. So it's a real mix. Currency values, growth differences, internal economic structure, inflation, investment income flows, even basic resource needs. Lots of moving parts.
Definitely.
So what actually happens when these imbalances get large and stick around? What are the real consequences, especially of a big ongoing deficit? Yeah, the consequences can be pretty significant, both inside the country and externally. Let's take the current account deficit first.
You're spending more abroad than you're earning from abroad, essentially.
Right. So domestically, that net outflow of funds can actually dampen overall economic activity. Demand is leaking out to foreign producers instead of boosting domestic ones. It can slow growth. It also often puts downward pressure on the currency. If you're constantly selling your currency to buy foreign currency for imports, the value of your currency might fall.
Which makes imports more expensive. Potential inflation issues there too.
It can feed into inflation, yes. And critically, you have to finance that deficit. You're spending more than you earn internationally, so where does the extra money come from?
You have to borrow it from other countries.
Peace.
Or sell assets.
That's generally it. Either the government or private sector borrows from abroad, or the country sells off assets, companies, properties, stocks, bonds, to foreign buyers.
Which means building up foreign debt or foreign ownership of your economy.
Exactly. That increases the country's vulnerability. What if foreign lenders get nervous? What if global interest rates rise? It can also hurt domestic industries that have to compete constantly with cheaper imports.
So potential for slower growth, a weaker currency, rising debt, vulnerability, and pressure on local firms. What about the impact beyond the country's borders?
Well, that growing reliance on foreign capital obviously reduces your economic autonomy. It can also damage the country's credit rating, making it more expensive to borrow in the future.
Right.
And fundamentally, remember, the balance of payments has to balance overall. So a current account deficit must be matched by a surplus in the capital and financial accounts. Money has to be flowing in via investment or borrowing to offset the outflow from trade and income.
That balancing act is key. The money has to come from somewhere else in the system.
It always does. Now, what about the other side? A large, persistent current account surplus.
That sounds like the better position to be in, right? Earning more than you spend internationally.
You might think so, but it's not always unambiguously good, especially if it's very large and goes on for a long time. Domestically, a huge surplus could actually be a sign of weak domestic demand.
How so?
It might mean consumers aren't spending enough or businesses aren't investing enough at home. So the economy becomes overly reliant on selling stuff abroad because domestic activity is sluggish.
Huh. So the money's flowing in, but maybe it's not being put to work effectively within the country itself.
That can be a concern. Also, just as deficits can weaken a currency, large surpluses tend to strengthen it. Lots of demand for your exports means lots of demand for your currency.
And we already said a strong currency can eventually hurt competitiveness.
Right. It can make it harder for your exporters down the road. Plus, big persistent surpluses can cause major friction internationally.
Trade tensions.
Exactly. Countries running deficits might get frustrated and accuse the surplus country of manipulating its currency or using unfair trade practices to gain an advantage. We see those kinds of disputes flare up.
Yeah, that definitely sounds familiar. And externally, what are the effects of running big surpluses?
Well, surplus countries are accumulating claims on the rest of the world. They're building up foreign assets, lending money out, buying foreign companies. This gives them financial power.
Okay.
But if you have several major economies all running huge surpluses simultaneously, while others are running huge deficits, it creates what economists call global imbalances. You get this unstable situation where debt is piling up in one part of the world while massive creditor positions build elsewhere. That can be risky for the whole global financial system.
So neither extreme is really ideal long term. Deficits mean debt and risk. Surpluses might mean weak domestic demand and can cause global friction and imbalances. It really underscores why managing these balances is important.
Absolutely. It's a critical aspect of macroeconomic management.
Okay, so let's crystallize the key takeaways from this deep dive. First, clearly, you really can't understand a country's place in the global economy without getting a handle on its current account.
It's just fundamental. And second, these imbalances, deficits, or surpluses, especially when they're large and persistent, aren't just abstract numbers. They have real consequences, and policymakers need to pay attention to avoid potential crises or conflicts.
And governments do have tools they try to use, right? Things related to exchange rates, policies to boost exports or discourage certain imports, reforms to make the domestic economy more competitive.
Yes, though it's often a very difficult balancing act with complex trade-offs. There's no single magic bullet.
This has been incredibly helpful. It really connects things you read about in the news, trade figures, currency movements, international investment. It shows how they all link together through this current account framework.
It provides that essential organizing principle, that lens to see the connections.
Okay, so here's a final thought for you, building on everything we've discussed. We kept mentioning that a current account deficit has to be balanced by inflows in the other parts of the balance of payments, the capital and financial accounts.
That accounting identity, yes, it has to balance.
So picture a country running a really large ongoing current account deficit. Year after year, money is flowing out on balance through trade and income. Think about the kind of pressure that puts on the other side of the ledger. What does that country have to be doing in the global financial markets just to make the books balance? Where is that offsetting inflow of money necessarily coming from? What actions is it almost forced to take?